Becoming born again, having a new relationship with the Lord through His Son, has opened up a whole new relationship with the world. And that relationship is that of antagonism. Where once we were friends with the world and enemies with God because of sin, now we're friends with God, we've trusted Him, but the world has not become our friend anymore. That world system, that subtlety, the suppression of truth and unrighteousness, the glance of disdain that you pick up, the animosity toward those who believe in a transcendent and in a very real God, and this persecution that happens, and it happens in every society, sometimes more subtle than others, and others, well, we have our brothers and sisters right now in China who literally are imprisoned because of their faith. In Sudan, who have been dragged off and taken as slaves because of their faith. In other places, that horrible persecutions. In Islamic countries, especially. But ultimately, the amazing thing is, you see, we're all in this race. We're all in this race. And essentially, that's what he covers in chapter 12 here. This picture of a race and the encouragement to be fortified for that race. Let's take a look. Chapter 12. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. This race that is set before us, obviously in any race, there is a few things you have to consider. You have to consider what's the objective in the race. The objective of the race is to win, is to get through the race. You're not a racer unless you're running. Our race is a little bit different, though. It's a race of life. It's a race where we are pursuing personal holiness, and essentially, that won't stop until we leave the world, until the Lord gives us our new body. And to finish our race with joy is an objective, but like in any race, there are rules to follow, there's a path to keep, there's obstacles to overcome, there's dangers to avoid, as well as there's strength to be sought for. When you think about a racer, in a race, he's got all of these elements. And in a sense, we have this life of faith now that needs to be added to. Peter, if you'll turn a couple of pages to your right, in 2 Peter chapter 1, you see this picture of adding to your faith. In verse 5, for this very reason, giving all diligence, he says, add to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control perseverance, to perseverance godliness, to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness Christian love. Now in this race, of course, one of the things that you're going to do, ultimately where you want to come, is that Christian love, that self-forgetfulness. You don't even think about yourself anymore. That's the ultimate rejoicing and victory. When you come to that place where it's not about you anymore, you're just enveloped in the things of God and others, and it's a delight. Now, the world will say that kind of self-denial, you can't get too radical with that because, you know, you've got to think about number one. You've got to think about you. And when people do, what happens is when they come to that mantra, I just got to be happy, which implied means I've got to hurt you here because I need to be happy. I need to mess you up because I need to be happy. I need to grab this because I need to be happy. I need to impose upon you because I need to be happy. That's what the world thinks of it when they think of that. Jesus says, no, it's the other way around. You want true happiness and joy? It doesn't come that way. It comes when you do come to that place where you can forget about yourself. Now, you can't do that with some self-help program, though. There's no way to arrive at it. Because the real problem is the heart, and the heart has to be transformed, and only the Lord can do that. So even to begin the race, you need to have a new heart that thirsts after the things of God. And then once you have that race, now once you start the race, he says right here, let us lay aside every weight and the sin that so easily ensnares us. See, when you first realize your objective to win the race, then you've got to lay aside, or you've got to rid yourself of hindrances, if you will. Lay aside every weight and every sin. Now, unless I'm running, I'm really not aware of maybe extra weight that I'm carrying. If I'm going from my home to the car to the office, I've got my briefcase or my backpack, that's great. I need those things for carrying things that I need. But if I were actually in a race, I wouldn't be lugging around my backpack or my cell phone or all the other things that I need in a day-to-day basis. If I'm in a race, I'd be painfully aware of every little extra pound. I would be conscious of that, and I'd want to strip all that down to the bare essentials. Bikers are like that. I mean, they strip those bikes down to nothing when they're in a race. Last year at Vacation Bible School, our theme was, you know, running the race, and we had the car. Anthony had brought his race car, his NASCAR, and it's funny. It looked pretty on the outside. You look on the inside, it was ugly. There wasn't a creature comfort to be found in that thing. And the whole point is because he's in a race. Every little pound counts. So that thing was stripped in the inside. It was just a shell in the sense. And that's the idea that he says here. Lay aside every race. Now, if you were camping and all of a sudden a hungry bear starts coming after you, you're not going to think about, you know, carrying the stove and the little kitchen set and, you know, the tent and try to run from the bear then. You're just going to run with the bare essentials. In fact, I'm reminded of the two boys that were attacked by a bear, and one of them starts running and he's going to try to climb a tree, and the other, you know, starts putting his tennis shoes on. The other guy says, "What are you doing putting your tennis shoes on? You can't outrun a bear." He goes, "I don't need to outrun a bear. I just need to outrun you." So anyway, just a thought there. Yeah, that's real selfish. The point is, you're not going to be thinking about what you need to carry. You just need the bare essentials. Now, I'm kind of intrigued lately, this show Survivor Man or whatever it is. You know, I'm interested in that because it's just kind of fun just getting out in the wild and surviving. I know I'll probably never be in that place. But when he showed how to take a piece of cloth, if you only had one match and you get a fire going, you take this cloth and you put it in some sort of a metal thing and you burn it in the fire without letting oxygen get to it, and you create this charred cloth. And then you keep it with you, and every time you need to start a fire, just add a little spark to that thing and it just starts to glow with the coals. Put it in some kindling and blow on it and you've got an instant fire. Well, I was intrigued, so naturally I had to try that. And I was rather amused by how well it worked, though. You know, I have this charred piece of cloth and I've got a little magnifying glass. Put that thing on there in not even 5 seconds. That thing's glowing with coals. Start a little fire, and now who needs matches anymore? This is great. This is a newfound thing for me. Survival skills. When you're in the race and you're thinking of everything you need to do to get to the end of the race, there is that mentality that you're going to do. You're going to make the steps, the choices you need to get there, whatever it is. And the funny thing is, there's an irony to this as Christians. When your goal is to run the race, you see, you think differently about what is a hindrance and what is not a hindrance. You see the things we normally think are hindrances? You came here today, and I can guarantee that some of you thinking in terms of hindrances are some of the trials you're going through. Oh, man, this is happening at work, and I got the call from the doctor. I've got to go in for tests, and, you know, I heard this, you know, my family member is going through that, and, you know, my job situation is insecure financially. And you're looking at all of these things as hindrances, but in reality, when it comes to the race that the Lord has called you into, these things are actually meant for your good, to strengthen you. They'll get your roots down deep. That you'll know who you know that the Lord, who He is and what He's going to do. When I was in wrestling and goofing around and I'd hear the coach say, "Pulley, take 10 laps. You know, oh man, I don't want to do that. I would be bummed, you know, running the laps, you know. Well, my coach was doing me a big favor. And by the time I was a senior, I actually learned that any time somebody got punished with laps or push-ups or extra, you know, weight they had to push, I saw them do it and I thought, wait a minute, they're getting ahead of me. So I jump in. Coach, can I run too? Coach, can I do those too? I mean, he thought I was nuts, but I didn't want anyone to get ahead of me because I had one goal in mind. I knew that they were running more than me or pushing more weight than me or doing more push-ups than me. They were getting ahead of me slightly. And I thought, I can't let that happen. So what was a trial at one time was now a blessing. And the same thing as a Christian, I used to look at all those negative circumstances as all, no, please, not now. Why is this happening to me? Kick the car, you know, when you get a flat tire. Kick the cat, you know, whatever. Just, you know, you have that mentality. But, you know, the funny thing is, now I look at them and I can actually, and I don't do this as a matter of positive mental attitude, you know. This is a matter of reality. Thank you, Lord. I believe you're doing something good, and I rejoice. I'm going to watch you do this work. Now, again, we've been given wonderful things in this world to enjoy. This isn't all about denial and suffering. But there are times when those blessings the Lord can give to us, those things can be a hindrance. When we get to that place, maybe some of you are at that place where, man, everything's balanced. Everything, all good news around you. Things are going great. This is like one of those plateaus. Woo, this is nice. My friends, we're getting along and we're doing this together. And no health issues, no financial issues. All this good news this week. And you've come in like, yeah, this is cool. It's a shame other Christians don't know the joy I know right now. Well, be careful because you can enjoy that. But this is just an oasis. Because that's a blessing to enjoy, but just know that next week maybe your roots need to get down deeper. If all the time the rains were coming, all the time everything was just working out perfect, the sun and the rain, your roots would never go down deep. It's in drought that they go down deep. So this is how he wants to look at it. So this is what he says. You know, recognize your objective. Running the race. You're running the race. Don't forget you're in a race. Secondly, rid yourself of hindrances, the sin that easily besets you. Those weights are correlated to sins. By the way, the sin that easily besets you literally is, in the Greek, it's an interesting word. It's euperistasios, which literally means skillfully surround you. It's almost as if it's artful in how Satan sets you up. He knows your weaknesses. He knows what's attractive to you. He knows how to set you up to put down your focus on your race and just get deviated, you know, get diverted over here. So we have to understand that. We need to rid ourselves of those hindrances so that we can, what he comes down to, which is the main thrust, run with endurance the race that is set before us. That's ultimately what we're supposed to be doing. Now, of course, that involves this endurance, this word in the Greek, hupomone, we also translate it patience. It's a very rich word. The idea of it is we're not in it for a marathon. It's a long, extended, a prolonged, if you will, experience where the best case could be, you know, with the story of the tortoise and the hare. I mean, that race is a perfect illustration. You know, the tortoise just kept plodding along, enduring, where the hare would run and flit around and be distracted and eventually lost the race. The story is a very important story for children to learn. That a constant continuance is going to get the job done. And that's essentially what the Lord has called us to. And throughout church history, there is always examples of difficulties and trials that constantly test your resolve to keep plodding forward. Now, some don't like to think of the term plotting. They want to think about a victorious victory in Jesus and let's conquer, you know, and let's wave our imaginary swords around and beat up the devil. But you know what? The real victory is constant endurance, plotting forward, not getting distracted with the joys and the excitements and the blessings the Lord gives you. Great. Thank you, Lord, for those. Not getting bummed out at the difficulties, the trials, the struggles, because you know that's a part of life. Just keep going forward. Running the race with endurance. Endurance is what we need. Now, there are lots of amazing illustrations of this outside of the Christian world. You know, stories like Wilma Rudolph. Now, maybe you don't know her, but she won 3 gold medals in the 1960 Olympics in Rome. Do you know that how she started was quite interesting? She got polio when she was a little girl. It left her left leg crooked, her foot twisted inward, so she had to wear leg braces. And after 7 years of painful therapy, finally was able to walk without the braces. At age 12, Wilma tried out for a girls' basketball team, didn't make it. So every single day she practiced with a girl and a couple of boys until next year she tried out, she made the team. When a college track coach saw her during a game, he talked her into letting him train her as a runner. And by the age of 14, listen to this, she had outrun the fastest sprinters in the U.S. And in 1956, she made the Olympic team but didn't do very good. That disappointment drove her on to work harder so that in 1960, she won more gold medals than any woman had ever won up to that point. 3 gold medals in track. Now, the story is an amazing story. But what I love about that is just the constant endurance, the fighting through the challenge and the difficulty. See, it's in the enduring and it's in the end that you see eventually the payoff comes. And that's what happened to her. Now, those examples, her and many others, are examples of a temporary goal. I know the pains I put myself through to accomplish success in wrestling. And yet I look at that and it was just, well, what do I have now? You know, I've got a scrapbook with pictures and a few medals and nobody cares. It's all old stuff. Young wrestlers look at me now like, yeah, I could take the old man. You know, he's no big deal. It's like, yeah, I'm an old man now. I'm not going to be grabbing some of these young college age guys anymore. In fact, I remember entering one of the wrestling tournaments here in Old Bridge, the Masters division, over 30. When I first came out here, I was 26, and by the time I hit 30, I couldn't wait to get in that division because I looked at the wrestling guys in college coming out, and I was like, whoa, I'm not going to mess with those guys. We get older. But the point is this. I put up with a lot of difficulty and pain to accomplish that temporary goal. How much more should we with an eternal goal? Keep enduring, keep enduring, keep pressing on. So we need endurance to run the race, which leads us to the next verse. What's the goal? Well, he says in verse 2, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Now, the goal in this verse is one word, one three-letter word, which happens to be the same goal that Jesus modeled for us. That's why we're called to look to him, to follow his example, because what helped him endure what he endured was this three-letter word for the joy set before him. He endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. In the end, where will you be in the end? You know, a lot of young people today are not willing to work hard to achieve a goal of getting good work ethics. I read an article in the paper of how young people on summer now don't want to work. They just want to live off whatever money their parents give them and just have fun. According to the article, this is really a big, big, big concern because the workforce will hugely be hurt if they don't learn good work ethics. And then they will be damaged goods because by the time they get out of high school without having developed that discipline, you know, I look around sometimes and I see young people working in summer jobs and, man, I have the deepest respect for them. Flipping burgers, you know, working in the hot sun, the sweat. And I'm thinking, you know what? Good for them. Good for them. And then I see other young people flitting around, wasting their time, hanging out with their friends. And I'm thinking, you guys are nuts. Because you don't know what it's going to mean for you later on in your life. Now, a lot of you parents are going, yeah, preach it, brother, preach it, yeah. My son isn't getting it. Are you hearing this? You're elbowing him right now, kind of a thing. It's true, though. It's true. You want to see the end with joy? There's an aspect of endurance here. Now, in our part, of course, it's not about the work ethic. It's not about this. It's really much more than that. It's about running the race of faith, trusting the Lord, and avoiding the sin that ensnares us. So it's a much different kind of a race. But what did Jesus model for us? Well, he modeled complete dependence upon his Father, communion with his Father, lived in complete obedience. Which of us could say, as Jesus said, I always do those things that please the Father? I don't know about you, but I can't say that. I wish I could say that. I want to say that. I want to be able to say all the time, I please you, Lord, but I don't please him all the time. Sometimes I act selfishly. Sometimes I think of myself more than I should. And I know you think of me more than, you know, no, I'm just kidding. You think of yourself more. Enough about me. Let's talk about you. So what do you think of me? Kind of a thing. No. We do. This is our nature. And you know what? Jesus lived such a life that he was such in communion with the Father. He was amazed at his disciples, how little faith they had. Because when things are going good, it's like you don't see him getting all excited about that good. It was more about his Father. When things are going bad, it's like, hey, the storm's no problem. And I look at that. He lived a life of perfect confidence in his Father, always pleasing his Father. Now, we're distanced from that goal. But that's ultimately what our goal is, to be like him, because that's the gateway for the greatest joy. Now, what his motive was and what the end result was joy. He saw the joy ahead, so he endured. Now, I used to think, and I think you can relate with this, I used to think in my maturity, honestly, that everybody was out for some selfish reason. Everybody was out for number one. They might pretend to be very gracious or nice or benevolent or charitable, but they were really thinking of what they were going to get out of it. Everybody has an ulterior motive. Now, I thought that because essentially that's what I thought. I had an ulterior motive. I had my friends as long as they pleased me. I had, you know, I loved if I got loved in return. And I figured everybody was this way until I met somebody that I couldn't explain. Until I met him. Looking at Jesus was quite a different picture. Here's one that never once lived for himself. Never once did he make a decision for himself. Never once did he use his divine power for himself. And he boggles my mind as I look at him. He is definitely way beyond normal human nature. Napoleon, the great French leader, once said, "I know men, and Jesus Christ is no man." Now, when you study men and you're around men and you understand their human nature, and when you're very much in contact and in awareness of your own self, you know what our nature is like. We're greedy, we're lustful. That's human nature. Then you come into contact with somebody who's not, it's just astounding. And of course, you assume there must be an ulterior motive. And of course, with Jesus, here he was in this amazing joy in front of him, laying his life down. Now, so much of the selfishness that I used to have is gone. I still have some. I don't want it. And I'm continually looking for opportunities to lay those things aside, to keep running the race enduring, because Jesus did. He showed me how the greater joy, so much more amazing, so much more fulfilling than the temporary pleasures of this life. You see, I discovered something about a pleasure in looking at Jesus that far exceeded the sinful delights of the past. A joy of pleasing him, where the joy of the Lord is my strength in trials, and the joy of the Lord is my caution with the joys of this world. In other words, I hold on lightly to the joys of this world. They're fun. They're nice. You know, go on a vacation together. Hey, we're going to cruise together next year. That's awesome. A lot of fun, excitement, but it's just fun. It's not the same as walking with the Lord in that fellowship with him. So Jesus shows us the extent of this. He endured the cross. Now, the great example here, and this is the whole thing, when it says, when he looks at this and enduring the cross, what have you been called to in your own life to deny? You might think this is radical, but actually, you're given the opportunity to encounter him in a brand new way. And when it says he endured the cross, despising the shame, I'll bet you most here have no clue what this actually means. Because just looking at it, we might think of the newer use of the word despising and miss the point here completely. When I think of despising something, I think of hating something, right? I despise, you know, whatever type of food. I despise olives. I can say that. But actually, that's not the proper use of the term despise as it was used here. As it was used in the Old English, it was quite different. To say, I despise something means I take it lightly. Like I don't even consider it. It's like not even to be considered, not even a big deal. That's what's said here. When it says Jesus despises the shame, I used to think, oh, he endured the cross. He hated the shame of it, but he endured it. No, it's actually he endured the cross, not even taking into consideration the shame. Now, think about how powerful that is. Shame is pretty powerful. It's a powerful motivator both to do good and to do bad. You get involved in a gang, those gang members can shame you into doing things you would have never done. Because if you don't do them, you know, you won't be part of us. And the shame of not fitting in. Or the shame that you might experience being caught in doing something wrong. You know, our culture in America is largely built on guilt. If you're raised as a good Catholic or a good Protestant, you know the effect of guilt. You feel that guilt, and you have to go to counseling to deal with that guilt because of all the things you're doing. Guilt is a part of our society. In other cultures, shame is the part. Shame is the main motivator. In other words, they have no guilt. If they get away with it, they don't even think about it. They have no compulsion about anything. But if they get caught, they lose face, and the shame is horrendous. Well, whether it's guilt or shame, just understand, with Jesus, The shame was, here is a person who is the very Son of God, who came from the heavens in perfect harmony and fellowship with his Father. And think about this. He came down and became one of us. First enduring that humility, and then having hostility. As he goes on in the next verse, he says, consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself. Three times that word endured is used. We're going to come back to that. But he endured this hostility. The higher you are when you hit the bottom, the greater problem that is. The harder that is, the more difficult that is. Like if you're making $100,000 a year and you know your company has to cut back and they reduce your salary to $90,000, that's tough. You got to make some lifestyle choices and changes and whatever. But if you were making what Bill Gates makes, and then you go from there to homeless on the streets of New York, that's the idea of comparing, and that's what the word consider actually means. It's actually a mathematical term. It means compute, calibrate it out, or better yet, consider this, compare in proportion. It's an analogy. Compare your sufferings with his sufferings. What he experienced in going from way up here to way down here, it would be like equivalent. Well, it would be much worse than what it would be like for Bill Gates to go homeless. When you're used to living here and you go down to there, that's a huge change. And so he says, consider him who endured this. I mean, here, the King of Kings, Lord of Lords, listening to these little insignificant creatures saying and mocking, saying you're illegitimate. Imagine, this started from his childhood. When he was born, Herod tried to kill him, right? As a baby. Growing up, the rumors, the talk in the town about him being illegitimate, because they all knew, you know, he couldn't have been Joseph's. There was questions about that. Then, you know, the shame as he enters into his ministry and they mock him and laugh at him. You're from Galilee. That thick Galilean accent, like they talk like this there. That. You know, can you imagine? I mean, that's what he sounded like to those very educated people. He sounded like a hick. He sounded like he was just uneducated. Who do you think you are? I mean, this is how our Lord and Master came in humility. And then he endured the cross. It wasn't just the physical sufferings from the cross. It was a lot more than that. Here is one who is perfect and holy and right, has never lived for himself, never sinned, taking all the sin of the world upon him. Your computer would fry if you took the sin of your neighborhood upon you. You would not be able to handle that. If you even knew the sin of just your neighborhood, what goes on behind closed doors, what is done, the evil that is done in any given neighborhood, let alone a city or a country or a nation or a world, I think that we really underestimate what Jesus did on the cross. But it says here, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross. Didn't even count shame a thing to be weighed in the balance. So what? Compared to the joy. Paul says, you know, he counted all the suffering he went through as momentary light affliction compared to the glory, the weight of eternal glory. So this is meant to encourage us by his example. So if we want to look at this whole picture, it's a very simple outline. It's like we're enduring to win the race. The eyes are on the goal, looking to Jesus. And we're encouraged by his example, because this is what he does. He says, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. Consider him who did all these things, lest you become weary and discouraged. Now, we can become weary and discouraged. Maybe some of you this morning came in weary and discouraged. Some of you felt like quitting. Some of you are thinking that, you know what, this is a last-ditch effort. Maybe some of you parents, you know, your children got blessed at Vacation Bible School and they were so excited they dragged you here because they wanted to be a part of Children's Church. And they begged you to bring them. And so you came and you thought, well, I'll give it a try. I don't know. I don't know what's, hope these people aren't a cult or something. You know, I mean, who knows what people think when they first come here and down this warehouse office building down White Oak Lane, and you're parking a mile away and walking in the heat and, what's the matter with these people? Can't they get more parking? I mean, I know what you're thinking, because I think that. What's the matter with us? But, you know, you might be weary and discouraged, or you've been on the race going through these things, and you know what, to the point of exhaustion is the word weary and discouraged. But understand, discouragement is a very powerful tool in the enemy's hands. You get discouraged. You get to a point where you just want to give up. Understand, it's never time to give up. It's always too early to give up. Oftentimes, people have given up before that last step that could have opened a door. And it will test us in this. See, this is all part of our test. Even in the world, you know, Michael Jordan cut from the basketball team at one point. Did you know that from his high school basketball team? Thomas Edison, when he tried and attempted for 50,000 times to perfect the incandescent light bulb and failed, and his team was ready just to hang it all up. This is hopeless. It's useless. It's not going to work. And he says, nonsense. We're 50,000 times closer figuring this thing out. Now, that's the idea in a way that you shouldn't be surprised, first of all, that life is tough. If you're looking for life to be easy, you're going to be most miserable when life comes at you and hits you from all angles. When you arm yourself already with the understanding life is tough, this is normal, then you actually enjoy the times of oasis and the times of delight, the times of peace. And you know that during those times of difficulty, this is all part of your training and the Lord's going to do something, but it's always too early to give up, always too early. Because he goes on to verse 4 and he says this, "For you have not yet resisted the bloodshed, striving against sin." This tells us really what our whole goal is here in this life. Jesus endured the cross for the joy set before him. We're called to run the race, lay aside those sins that easily surround us and trap us. We're striving against sin. Sin is the enemy. That's the ultimate enemy, folks. It's sin. You know, I'm not up here trying to preach against sin because I'm offended that you guys are sinning in some way. How dare you do that? I know we're sinners. But the whole point of the goal in our minds is to lay those things aside. When you do, you'll be amazed at the joy that comes as a result of just having that peaceful fruit of righteousness. Now, we're going to learn a little bit about how the Lord helps us. First, he wants us to be a part of the race. In the next passage we'll be looking at next time will be how the Lord, faithful as a father, will discipline us at times, how he uses those things for our good. Because ultimately, we've not yet resisted sin to the point of shedding blood. Now, I like how he says yet. Keep that in mind. He was actually writing to people that they were going to face the Roman persecution. It was going to come to them. Hasn't yet come to you to that. You haven't laid your life down to avoid sin. Some of you might be called to do that. You could be honored with that opportunity. But at the end of the day, see, the prize goes to the victor, who will shine, the Bible says. Those who lead many to righteousness will shine as the stars forever and ever and ever. At the end of the day, the real glory won't be in obtaining the national basketball championship, or the Olympic gold medal, or the billion-dollar bonus that you can get for your genius in financial world. The real shine will be forever and ever and ever. That'll be the real shine. But don't quit. I know it's tough. As I get older, I realize, you know, not only physically, but also just the resolve to keep going forward. You know, not to rest in any success that is perceived around here. That means nothing. Keep going forward. Not distracted by any challenge and trials that want to make you quit. Just keep going. It's always too early to quit. One high school basketball coach, in trying to motivate his team, was said to the guys, you know, "Did Michael Jordan ever quit?" And they yelled out, "No." He says, "Did the Wright brothers ever give up?" "No." He says, "How about Elmer McAllister? Did he ever quit?" They were like, "Who's he? We've never heard of him." And he says, "Of course not, because he quit." I like that. Where do you end? It all depends on whether you want to be a part of the race, whether you're willing to endure, because it takes a race to be run with endurance, because we have him to look to who endured, and we consider him who endured. It is about endurance. It's about pressing on, plodding forward, little bit at a time, trusting the Lord, learning to put those things aside, There'll be sorrows, there'll be pains, there'll be struggles, there'll be joys, there'll be happiness, there'll be excitement. All of that shouldn't distract you in either direction. Just keep going forward. Lord, here's my life. Because at the end of the day, it's going to be awesome.